all morning I have been thinking about two things, actually last night too, but especially this morning, two things. The feast day today, the dedication of the Roman Basilica of Santa Maria Maggiore, and the gospel passage about the multiplication of the loaves. I have this sense that these two go together very well, and I've been trying to put them together. Until I got distracted by Carlos Yulo and his second gold medal, I was really thinking about these two. That's his name, right? Carlos? Carlos Yulo. So before I got distracted, I was trying to see how these two put together, this church and the Eucharist, the church and the multiplication of the loaves. Perhaps part of why I caught up with this is that yesterday I had one of the masses I had in the parish yesterday was the 10:30 mass, and it was very, very crowded. I didn't notice it at first. Of course, people come in late, so I didn't notice it until I got to the ambo. The deacon read the gospel, so during the reading of the gospel, everybody's standing up, and then when the deacon finishes, he goes over there, and I came to the ambo, and everybody sat down, and there were still a lot of people standing. And that's when I realized, oh, the church is really crowded, standing room only. So after the Mass, I was chatting with one of the men from the parish. I said, how big is this church? How many people can sit in this church? I thought maybe about 1,000. I didn't really know. He said 2,000. I don't know if that's true. But anyway, that's what the man said. In seating capacity, 2,000. Does anybody know, Father of the Church? Capacity, 2,000. Is it really true? Oh, 2,000. So there were more than 2,000 people. And then the comment I made, not knowing that today's gospel is the multiplication of loaves, I said, that's more than 2,000 people. Imagine what it would be like to have a crowd of 5,000 men. And then the man said, yeah, not including the women and the children. I said, it's today's gospel. So I have this in my mind because I was thinking the sacristans in the parish have to figure out how many hosts to put out for a mass that's going to have more than 2,000 people. Okay, well, so, but even deeper than that, it's part of the Anuim approach to the liturgy to put together the different aspects, the different readings, the feasts, the flow of the seasons. And Father Francis in particular did a lot of deep pondering into the mystery of the church of Mary as the icon of the church. Mary as the representation of the community of the church. And that's why a church building, especially a church building dedicated to the Blessed Virgin Mary, which is what Santa Maria Maggiore is, that is like an icon of an icon. It's a very deeply symbolic building. So, and inside that building, gathers the crowd that receives the multiplication of the bread. So that's the rough outline of what I'm pondering here. I just don't know how to put it together. But let's start with this church building in Rome. St. Mary Major, also known as Our Lady of the Snows. You probably have heard that legend about the snowfall in Rome. And in August in Rome, it's very hot. It doesn't snow. But according to the legend, the snow fell, and that's how they knew where to build the church. Not true, but it's a nice little story. Anyway, so it's a very old church. It's one of the oldest churches in history, the oldest Christian churches, one of the oldest churches dedicated to Our Lady, maybe the oldest, and also one of the biggest. So it's quite striking that a very old, very large church is dedicated to Our Lady, goes back to the 5th century. Now, when we make our annual Visita Iglesia pilgrimage, we sometimes encounter these very old Spanish churches. Sometimes they're built in the early 17th century, maybe 1602 or something like this. And I'm always struck by the antiquity of those big old Spanish churches. We're talking about a church that's more than 1,000 years older than the oldest church in the Philippines. Go back 1,000 years earlier, and this church dedicated to Our Lady is still there. And it was built in honor of the Council of Ephesus, which defended Mary's title, Theotokos, the God-bearer, the Mother of God. So this goes way back, and it shows the deep historical roots and the long-lasting conviction that Mary is a key figure in our faith, that she is the mother of God, that that identifying who Mary is helps us understand who Jesus is. Mary is the tabernacle. She is the church. She is the shrine. She is the place where God became flesh, where the Word became flesh. So she's a key figure, and without Mary, we don't have the Savior. Well, now this church is in honor of her. So that church represents Mary, and that church enshrines the Eucharist, like every Catholic church. That's what makes a Catholic church a Catholic church, right? The tabernacle. It's a shrine and enshrining the most precious gift we have, the Eucharist. I went to that church in Rome 25 years ago on a pilgrimage with some other women, including Father Francis, Sister Barbara. I don't have many memories of it. I don't remember the tabernacle. I don't remember where the Eucharist is even kept. It's a very big old church. Mosaics everywhere and artwork everywhere. And it's just, I don't know what, a little bit overwhelming. What I do remember is that there's a, under the main altar, there's a reliquary where they say the wood from the crib, Jesus' crib, is preserved. And I remember thinking at the time, I can't be. I'm a very skeptical person, so I didn't believe it. I'm not saying it's impossible. I suppose it's possible, and that's an ancient veneration of some pieces of wood that are supposed to be from the crib of the manger. But that's what I remember about the place. Now, that is there. That's part of the tradition. But there's also a very old icon of Our Lady, which I don't remember seeing, and I don't remember anybody mentioning it. It's the icon of the Salus Populi Romani. I think it's mentioned in the Annuum way. It's a very ancient icon, at least 1,000 years old, if not older. In fact, the tradition is that icon goes back to the St. Luke, that St. Luke painted the icon. Now, but in any case, it's a very ancient icon of Our Lady, venerated by the people of Rome as a sign of Mary's protection of them. I don't remember seeing it. Anyway, so the church is this large building where thousands of people can gather, and when people gather in the church, why do they gather? To encounter Jesus. Well, that takes us to the multiplication of the loaves as a prefiguration of the Eucharist. So let's look at this gospel for a moment. We just heard about the multiplication of the loaves last Sunday, a week ago yesterday. John's version, this is Matthew's version. It always interests me the differences in the accounts. They all have slightly different details. They're all talking about the same thing, 5 loaves for 5,000 men. That's clear. But in this case, it starts out with the death of John the Baptist and Jesus' decision to withdraw to a deserted place. In other Gospels, he wants the apostles to have a break, right? He wants them to have a rest because they've been active in their ministry, and he sees that they should take a little rest. And so he says, let's go to a deserted place. And when he gets there, the crowd is there, and he sees the sheep without a shepherd. In Matthew's version, he doesn't mention the need of the apostles. It seems as if Jesus' own need to withdraw after hearing the news of the death of John the Baptist is the reason to ponder the next stage of his public ministry, perhaps to grieve the loss of his cousin and probably a friend, someone who understood him, perhaps also to recognize that John's death is the sign of his impending death. Whatever it is, he goes to this deserted place, and the crowd gets there ahead of him, and he sees the crowd, and he's moved with pity for them. Doesn't say that he saw them as sheep without a shepherd, and it doesn't say that he taught them at great length. John's Gospel says, But it says he was moved with pity for them and he cured their sick. And then the disciples say, well, get rid of the people. There's too many people and there's no food. And Jesus says, well, you give them some food yourselves. These are all different details. One thing it doesn't say here is how the people were arranged. He said, how can you tell if there's 5,000 men or not? I was guessing that there was room in that big church for 1,000 people. Turns out I'm half wrong. So my estimate of crowds is really bad. Well, how can you figure out if there's 5,000 men or not? And that's a detail that's in all the Gospels. Well, in the other Gospels, it says that they sat down in groups of 50s and 100s. So they sat down in like gatherings of some kind. Perhaps that made it a lot easier to count them. So there's a group there, and a group there, a group there. You just count up 20 groups of 100, and you got 2,000 right there. Sorry, I'm just speculating. But the point of it is, an extraordinary miracle was performed here. Not a miracle of sharing, which is sometimes people say, sharing is also a great thing. And when we look at the little boy with the five loaves, you say, well, it's a beautiful thing that he surrendered his loaves. But that he didn't do the miracle. Jesus did the miracle. And the miracle is he fed the people. He provided bread for the people. We pondered this yesterday, right? Jesus said, they said, well, no, when did you get here? He said, you're not looking for me, you're looking for bread. You're looking for more bread. You should be looking for food that lasts for eternal life. You should be looking not just for perishable food, but for eternal food. And that's what he's doing here with feeding them. Yes, he's feeding them because they're hungry, but he's also, as he satisfies one hunger, he's increasing another hunger. Because once our bellies are filled, we realize, well, we want something more. I'm not hungry for bread now, I just ate. But I'm still hungering for something, and that's human experience. I want something more, and this recognition that Jesus can do something more is to make us hungry, make us hunger for God, so that we will follow him. So that we will lift up our hearts to higher things. And that's what's going on here. Now, putting them back together. When we experience this hunger, not hunger for food. If you're hungry, you're hungry for physical food, you're not going to get much to eat here in the chapel. But if you're hungry for God, where do you go? Where do we go when we're hungry for God? We come to Jesus. And if we have the privilege of being Catholic, we come to the Eucharist. We come to the bread of life, the one who says, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will not hunger anymore, will not thirst anymore. And the place where we encounter Jesus in the Eucharist is in the church, is in this tabernacle, this womb, this Marian place. That's why a church dedicated to Mary, well, this shrine is also dedicated to Mary, right? Our Lady of the Liturgical Life. A church dedicated to Mary reveals to us something profound about the identity of the church herself. Just as Mary is the place where Jesus is present, the church is the place where Jesus is present, and that's where we encounter him. Well, that's what I'm thinking about. I hope you can also ponder that. I don't know what else to say about it other than that. Thanks be to God we're here. We're here in Mary's embrace, and Mary gathers all of her children so that they can all be fed by the bread of life, and we must be grateful for Mary's work and for the gift of the bread of life offered freely to us.